proceed to case number six, please. Okay, case number five under advisement. Timothy Ferguson versus Joanne Barnett.
Good morning, Your Honors. Barry Schultz representing the plaintiff, Timothy Ferguson, this morning. Mr. Ferguson appeared at both of his hearings, administrative hearings for his Social Security Supplemental Security Income Disability Claim, pro se. The administrative law judge failed to explain to him any of the three factors which he was required to inform him of, according to this court in the Thompson and Binion cases. Therefore, Mr. Ferguson's waiver of counsel was invalid, and the district court judge, Judge Manning, did find that the waiver of counsel was invalid. Administrative law judges must, in all cases where a claimant is unrepresented, scrupulously and conscientiously probe into, inquire of, and explore the relevant facts of a claimant's disability claim. The ALJ failed to do that in Mr. Ferguson's case, and there are numerous examples of that in his decision and in the record. Probably most glaring is the fact that the ALJ failed to ask Mr. Ferguson even one question about his headaches. Mr. Ferguson, there's medical evidence in the record and a clinical impression by a consultative doctor, Dr. Modiani, who the Social Security Administration required Mr. Ferguson to see, indicating that he suffered from headaches, which were a mixed muscular and vascular type. Dr. Modiani noted that Mr. Ferguson had undergone multiple surgeries to the left side of his head, particularly to the ear, and that he suffered from nerve weakness on the left side of the face, the inability to completely close his left eye or to raise his eyebrow. He had deformities in the mouth and a deformity of the ear because of those surgeries. Mr. Ferguson told the doctor that following those surgeries, he began experiencing these severe headaches, that they occurred 3 to 4 times a week, lasting for up to 3 hours at a time. During the headaches, he could not engage in any significant activities. But the ALJ failed to address the headaches. He failed to ask Mr. Ferguson any questions about them, and he failed to discuss the headache impairment in his decision. And I believe on that basis alone, the ALJ failed to scrupulously probe into and explore the relevant facts in Mr. Ferguson's claim, and his decision should be reversed. However, in addition, the ALJ's questioning of Mr. Ferguson concerning his gout and his diabetes was superficial and almost non-existent. He asked almost no questions about the diabetes. Mr. Ferguson indicated that since he was diagnosed with that condition, his legs, his knees felt weak. The ALJ didn't follow up with any questions. In terms of his gout, the ALJ only asked him when the last time he had an attack was, to which Mr. Ferguson responded.
Are you saying the ALJ must help prosecute the case for him?
The ALJ is not to act as an advocate, but he must act as an investigator, where a claimant represents himself. And then
he must act as a prosecutor.
He's not supposed to act as the plaintiff's advocate, no, but he is supposed to explore all the relevant facts. And I think if a review of this court's decision in Thompson specifically dealt with a situation very much like this.
The Thompson case?
The Thompson case, yes, sir. In fact, in Thompson...
What's that site, please?
Yes, sir. That's 933 F. 2nd, 581. A 1991 decision.
Thank you.
In Thompson, the court quoted the Sixth Circuit case, Lashley versus Secretary of Health and Human Services, indicating that, quote, superficial questioning of inarticulate claimants or claimants with limited education is likely to elicit responses which fail to portray accurately the extent of their limitations. Mr. Ferguson, the ALJ found that Mr. Ferguson had borderline intelligence. He had a ninth grade education, and in addition, there's evidence that he suffered from mental impairment. So the ALJ was, in fact, required to pose appropriate and distinct questions to elicit all the relevant information in this case. and he failed to do that. Additionally, the ALJ failed to obtain updated medical records from the plaintiff's treating physicians. Mr. Ferguson had testified that for somewhat over a year prior to the hearing, he had been getting treatment from the Will County Health Department. He submitted records showing that he was prescribed medication for diabetes, was insulin, for gout, for osteoarthritis, and for hypertension. Exhibit 15F in the record is a letter from the Will County Health Department indicating that their doctors had prescribed this medication for Mr. Ferguson. So clearly he had been seeing doctors to the extent where he was getting this medication prescribed for him, yet the ALJ failed to obtain this evidence. Mr. Ferguson's counsel at the district court did submit those records to the district court in support of a motion to remand. And so we know from the record that the ALJ's failure to obtain those records prejudiced Mr. Ferguson. Those records included not only the fact that Mr. Ferguson was being treated for his diabetes, but that there was a diagnosis of diabetic neuropathy because Mr. Ferguson was complaining to his doctors of tingling and numbness in his hands. Of course, the ALJ didn't address the diabetic neuropathy because he was unaware of it, because he never obtained the records. That's one of the factors in the Thompson case and in the Binion case that this court says must be considered, is whether an ALJ has obtained all of the relevant records. In this case, he did not. Also, the ALJ relied on the opinions of two doctors who did not examine Mr. Ferguson, but who merely examined the records. Those doctors, in turn, relied on the consultative evaluation. But those evaluations were made 2.5 to 3 years prior to the date of the ALJ's decision. None of those doctors were aware of the fact that Mr. Ferguson had been diagnosed with diabetes, and none of those doctors had seen the first objective evidence in the file indicating that not only did Mr. Ferguson suffer from gout, but that he had to have been hospitalized, had 250 cc's of fluid drained from his right knee, and that there was x-ray evidence of a joint effusion in the right knee. None of the doctors on whom the ALJ relied were aware of the diabetes or the objective evidence of gout. The ALJ should have sent Mr. Ferguson for a consultative examination in order to get a then-current evaluation of his impairment. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the Court. My name is Patrick Nagel, and I'm representing the Commissioner of the Social Security Administration in this matter. This case involves whether the ALJ fully and fairly developed the record, and if so, whether appellant can demonstrate the necessary harm or prejudice required to warrant remand. In order to ascertain if the ALJ fully and fairly developed the record, it is important to identify what the record contains. Here, the record includes 5 instances in which the administrative law judge asked the appellant for any additional information or records which would be helpful for his case, 4 consultative examinations, 3 reviewing physician opinions.
What I find interesting, Mr. Nagel, is that the commissioner has conceded that the ALJ did not meet all of the requirements that are set forth in Binion. Binion, of course, holds that the burden is on the commissioner to show that the ALJ adequately developed the record, but the commissioner's brief seems to assert repeatedly that the burden is on Mr. Ferguson to establish prejudice from the inadequate record development, and I just don't see how that line of argument could ever be squared with Binion.
Well, Your Honor, the commissioner asserts that the commissioner does have the duty to show that the ALJ fully and fairly developed the record. However, the commissioner also asserts that under Binion, once the commissioner has shown that the ALJ did fully and fairly develop the record, the appellant must rebut that there is harm or prejudice resulting in order for remand to be warranted.
Well, how could there not be prejudice here when the ALJ didn't obtain the medical and treatment records from the treating physician or probe into all the relevant areas?
Well,
we have no questions about the headaches. We have no questions about the gout other than asking in some sort of minimal way whether it had been some time since Mr. Ferguson's last attack. We have no questions about his low back pain. We have no questions about the functional limitations that his hearing impairment has caused. And we have no questions about whether his diabetes, which had been recently diagnosed, had caused his eyesight to worsen.
I can address each of those in turn, Your Honor.
How about the diabetic neuropathy?
In terms of the diabetic neuropathy, I think it's important to understand that at the second administrative hearing, the ALJ did ask the appellant if he was seeing a doctor at the time. In fact, appellant's own main brief indicates and acknowledges that the ALJ asked that question, and that at that time, the appellant testified that, in fact, he was seeing a therapist for alcohol rehab.
Is claimant hard of hearing, too?
He can hear conversational hearing, enjoys going to music concerts. And,
I'm sure he enjoys going to
music. He can hear, yes.
Assistance there, too.
He can hear, yes, Your Honor. He indicated that, in fact, he was not...
Is he somewhat retarded?
His IQ is 80, which is borderline to low average, but it's not anywhere close to retarded, and
don't
he is fully functional.
Do you think he should have assistance in when he goes through something like this?
Well...
The law is quite clear. Where the disability benefits claimant is unassisted by counsel, the ALJ has the duty to scrupulously and conscientiously to probe into and inquire and explore for all of the relevant facts.
And I'm willing to demonstrate that he did that for each of these impairments, beginning with the diabetic neuropathy that you had brought up. In addition to testifying at the second hearing that he was not seeing a doctor, the appellant did, at the district court level, submit additional Will County medical records, which the ALJ was unaware of because the appellant had said that they didn't exist. In any case, those records were reviewed by the district court judge, and the district court judge found that they were immaterial. And
Doesn't it tell you something about this claimant when he says there are no records? I mean,
I believe there's an explanation to that, Your Honor.
Sure, there's a very clear explanation. He has an IQ of 80.
Another alternate explanation, Your Honor, is that although there was an indication in these records of diabetic neuropathy, shortly thereafter, just a few months later, there's also an indication that his diabetes was controlled with medication, that he had no more subjective complaints, and that there was no more...
That's got to do with what happened 3 months later.
Well,
we're talking about what happened on the day that he was there at the hearing. What he could explain. Was this man advised that he was entitled to free counsel?
Yes, he was, Your Honor.
Was he advised that the ALJ explain that it would be to at no expense to?
Yes, he was, Your Honor. He was also offered the option to be given listings of free counsel.
I don't know how an ALJ can proceed with a man with an 80 IQ.
Well, I believe, Your Honor, that
without the assistance.
His low average to borderline intellectual functioning, the medical experts who testified and the doctors who saw him indicated no significant functional limitations, mental functional limitations. So in any case, the diagnosis of diabetic neuropathy that appellant has
Let's
brought
go on
up.
On to the other ones then.
Sure. In regard to the headaches, he also told the examiner when he mentioned the headaches that the headaches were exacerbated by heavy drinking, which he did every day, starting at 8:30 in the morning, continuing until he either passed out or ran out of alcohol. He also indicated that he did not take medication for his headaches because he was opposed to medication. Another time he said it was because he didn't have money. Another time he said it was because he had a belief against medication. Finally, at the last hearing, after he stopped drinking, he also testified, or when he did testify, he didn't mention headaches as one of the conditions that was bothering him. He mentioned no functional limitations associated with those headaches. He didn't even indicate that it was an impairment. So after he stopped drinking, and which he admitted was an aggravating factor in his headaches, he no longer complained of headaches. As far as the gout, he had a 12-year history of gout, according to his own allegations, but only one flare-up in that entire 12-year period that required treatment, and that was when he had his knee drained on one occasion. He readily admitted at several occasions that, and testified to the fact that he received treatment whenever he required it through the emergency room because he didn't have a doctor and he couldn't afford a doctor. It's also interesting to note that in the record there are only four instances when he did go to the emergency room, once for a cut on his forehead, twice for bee stings, and once to a fluid drain from his knee. So although he does allege that he can't stand for more than 5 minutes at a time due to his pains from his back and his gout and whatnot, he didn't receive any treatment for these things, nor did he receive medication for any back impairment.
And that's the fault of the emergency room?
Well,
the fault of this man being unable to explain himself?
This man indicated that when he needed to receive medical attention, he did so by going to the emergency room. The fact that he never went to the emergency room with complaints of headaches or back pain or other allegations, I think, is an indication, along with the fact that he himself readily admitted he had no intention of ever working, that perhaps he was satisfied without, seeking attention for these matters, and testified that he had a relatively functional life in which he was able to tend to his own, hygiene. He was able to rent an apartment and care for it. He engaged in a lot of activities, socialized with friends, played cards, went to sporting events, went to concerts, drove a truck, went grocery shopping. I mean, his own testimony indicates it's completely contradictory with his allegation that he could only stand for 5 minutes at a time, if that's the case. And if he can only sit for 1 hour at a time, then how he could do this wide, vast array of activities is contradictory. His source of income, according to him, was gambling. Although he did testify at the second hearing that, in fact, when he had earlier stated to the medical examiner that he gambled for a living, playing dice and cards, that during his testimony at the hearing, he said, "Oh, no, I never made more than $6 a day doing that, or $6
a day." Where did he get the money from to gamble?
Where did he get the money from to gamble?
Yeah.
I believe he played cards and dice, and where he obtained...
A perpetual
thing. He was able to rent an apartment, and he was able to afford 12 to 24 cans of beer a day, so he was, in some respect, able to... And he also drove a truck, so...
Pardon me? He also drove trucks?
So it indicates that he did have some financial resources.
Was he employed by somebody, or...
No, he's never been employed, although he did...
Was it his own truck?
His own truck. I see that my time is running low. Are there any other specifics that you would want me to address?
That's up to you. You're the one who's got to carry the burden.
Well, what I'd like to say is that a reading opinion indicates several factors that the court looked at when analyzing whether or not this person who was not represented did receive a full and fair development of the record. I believe that in this case, like Binion, if you look at each impairment and you look at the scant evidence of record, and you look at the appellant's own testimony, you'll see that, in fact, the ALJ did the best job he could. And, in fact, there is no evidence missing from this record which would show that he was disabled. And there is nothing. As the district court itself found, those records were immaterial and would not have altered the ALJ's decision. And there's nothing in this, not contained in this record, that appellant has shown which indicates that this person should have his case remanded because he's not disabled.
No, I haven't seen the record, so I am not in any position to argue.
Well, that's my decision. So I would ask that you affirm the district court's decision. Thanks.
All right, counsel. He says your man had all the advice that he could give him.
I think even the argument...
It's only the record, then, that will tell us the truth.
Well, except the point here isn't whether the issue isn't whether the ALJ's decision is supported by substantial evidence, but whether there is evidence which the ALJ should have obtained.
That's right.
On which he should have made a proper...
What do you say he should have obtained that he could have obtained that he did not ask about?
Well, there's no questions about headaches, despite the fact that there's evidence of a significant headache impairment. Although the claimant was...
Was it from alcohol?
The record doesn't, no, the record does not establish that. The counsel,
well, I know your client isn't going to say that it is.
Well,
the
doctor from Social
use common sense.
The doctor from Social Security who examined him, I mean, Mr. Ferguson has a substantial deformity in his ear. And
in
underwent
his ear?
In his ear, yes.
Yeah.
He's deaf in his left ear. So the fact that he can go maybe to concerts and listen to some music, he's completely deaf in his left ear. He had multiple surgeries on that side of his head and has nerve weakness on that side of his head. There's a medical...
Is there any evidence in the record that he could not intelligently respond to the questions?
Well, I think, yes, you read the transcript, I think it's really clear. In fact, when the ALJ, there was a medical expert psychiatrist who testified. The ALJ asked Mr. Ferguson if he had any questions for the doctor, and Mr. Ferguson's response was, I don't understand half of what she said, and then he didn't ask her any questions. I think, again, that shows a prejudice by his not having counsel. He couldn't cross-examine the witness at the
How do you force counsel on someone who doesn't want him?
Well, that's where we go back to the question of...
That's the constitutional right.
This was an invalid waiver. It's not so much that Mr. Ferguson didn't want it. It's clear from this record Mr. Ferguson didn't understand. In fact, at the second hearing...
Was he asked, do you want free counsel?
At the second hearing, he was not asked anything.
At the first hearing?
At the first hearing... He was asked if he wanted an attorney, but he was not told how an attorney might be able to help him. He was not told that attorneys might represent him on a contingent fee basis. He was told that legal aid might represent him, and if they represented him, they would do it for free. That's the only thing that he was told, and that doesn't meet with this court's requirements as set forth in Thompson and Binion. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We will take the case under advisement and proceed to case